This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA attorney and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, the best-selling author of Retire Secure and the Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. Now on the air and online worldwide at RetireSecure.com. Get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm your host, Hannah Haytainen-Kay, and of course I'm here with Jim Lang, CPA, attorney, and best-selling author of the first and second edition of Retire Secure, and now his new book, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again. One small change for the new year is that the show will start at 7:05 instead of 7 p.m. to allow for KQV to provide the news at the top of every hour. Jim's guest tonight is Neil Godfrey, renowned expert on children's finances, so this will be a special show for parents and grandparents. Neil is the founder of the Children's Financial Network and is author of many books on finances for women, parents, grandparents, and children, including the New York Times number one bestseller, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children. You may have seen Neil on Oprah, Good Morning America, Today Show, NBC, and CNN. She will be joining Jim to share her insights on helping your children and grandchildren grow into financially responsible adults. Only one quarter of parents say they feel well prepared to teach their kids about basic personal finances. As a result, roughly 180,000 young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 declare bankruptcy each year. We will talk about how to be sure that you and your children or grandchildren don't become a statistic. When you start teaching your kids to be financially responsible, and how to combat the I want syndrome. Tonight's show will also include special tips for grandparents. Children grow up sooner than you think and will need to buy cars, get mortgages, manage credit cards, pay off student loans, and save for retirement. This show will help you make sure your kids are financially fluent. But before I turn it over to Jim, I want to remind our listeners that the show is live, so please feel free to call in with your questions for Neil. The number is 412-333-9385. Again, that is 412-333-9385. Good evening, Jim, and welcome to the program, Neil.
Thank you.
And wonderful to be here.
And welcome back. I should tell our audience that we've been on for a while now, and this year, one of the things that I have decided to do, in addition to having some new guests, is to bring back the real champions, the people who just hit it out of the park with their last radio appearance, and that's why Neil is literally leading the charge for the 2012 year. Neil, you did a great job last time, and I'm hoping that we could have an equally good show. So it's wonderful to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be back.
Well, some of the things we might touch on will be a little bit of a repeat, but maybe with a different tint. But why don't we start with even just some of the basics? What does it mean to raise financially responsible children, and particularly with the economy the way it is today? I don't know if the tough economy has changed your thinking on your approach to raising financially responsible children.
Well, basically the economy has highlighted that this is even more important, and it really highlights everything that you teach, Jim, in terms of really empowering people to take charge of their financial life. And frankly, a lot of us grew up in what I would call, you know, kind of a Donna Reed household, those households where the biggest secret was any money issues, and maybe even what dad earned, or what the household bills were, or all those mysteries like paying taxes and taking charge of your own finances. And there is no way to expect these kids to be empowered to take charge of their financial life if we don't start talking about it and give these kids the tools that they are going to need. So that's really what I do. And I think what you highlighted about the economy is this is a great time for us to take a deep breath and get back to basics. Who are we? What's our relationship with money? What do we really want to convey? are you really cooler because you drive a cooler car? Really? Is that what you want to tell the kids? So that's really what I want the whole recession that we're in now, or the challenges that we're facing, to be a time for us to assess where we are and who we are in relationship with money. And also, if for some reason the recession isn't hitting you, which I think would probably be unusual, but I want our kids to be sensitive to the families who are touched by this. And we need to give them those tips and tools and conversations around money.
Neil, one of the problems with having you as a guest is that every time you say something, I want to ask 10 more questions instead of the ones I've already prepared.
Well, I'm sorry for jawing on. So, Jim, the deal is, you know, you just have to say, all right, stop it, Neil.
No. The problem is it's such good stuff. But I wanted to touch on something that I wrestle with personally. And I have a 16-year-old daughter, and, you know, we do okay. And sometimes it's natural for me to talk about my business and, you know, and mm-hmm. I'll talk about a particular sale of, even let's just say, you know, somebody agreed to do an estate plan with us and it's $3,000 or $5,000 mm-hmm. or something like that. By the way, for most listeners, don't get scared. We still do quite a few in the one to $3,000 range.
Of course.
But anyway, and my daughter's sitting there and she's hearing this and she's working for minimum wage, doing some babysitting and actually doing some work at the school. And she's thinking, boy, he can make, you know, in one engagement what it'll take a year for me to make. And I sometimes think, well, is that appropriate for me to speak like that? Should I not say that? And what should parents say? I mean, I don't think that, are you advocating that it says, well, dad makes $62,500, but that's before his 401k contribution? How open should we be with our children?
Well, what I do is welcome to planet Earth. I sit down with them and I show them what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is I have, you know, X amount of education. I have X amount of experience. I started my first job in 1972, paid $6,500 a year. That always, you know, causes the air to be sucked out of a room when you hear that number. And I had to pay, obviously, taxes and, you know, all my living expenses. So even though it may sound like a lot in terms of what you get paid, I think it's really important to sit down with the kids and say, here it is. This is what I get paid. This is what goes out for taxes. This is, you know, my budget. Now, a couple of caveats. Number one, you have to say to them, I expect this not to be discussed with anyone. Not because it's such, you know, a heinous thing. It's because it's I don't want anyone to feel badly or, you know, I don't want anyone to judge me by what I earn because that's not who I am. That's not the, you know, the Jim Lang that you know. It's what I do with the money. It's my value system and what we believe in as a family, not the money. It's never about the money. And different jobs pay different things. Fact of life. That's it. And that's number one. Number two, if they don't get the full picture, they think, wow, $3,000 for an estate plan. Oh, my God. You know, you could do, you know, 7,000 of those, and look what you'd earn, Dad. Well, that's not, you know, that's like, hold it. That's not the fact of life. It doesn't work like that. By the way, let me tell you how many hours of work went into that. Let me tell you how many hours of preparation and follow-up. And do an estimate of how much knowledge of hours you needed in there. So you know what, Jim? I bet you're being paid less than minimum wage for that, by the way.
Well, I'm not sure it's that bad, but it's a lot less than people expect.
No, but you know what I'm saying. It just didn't happen. You didn't roll out of bed and decide that you were going to be an expert in this field.
Yeah. No.
And, you know, that's I want you to put it in perspective, but I also want you to sit down with the bills. Part of Welcome to Planet Earth is what I call the bill-paying game. Lay the bills out on the table. Now, if you can't afford stuff, I don't mean you personally, but somebody, you know, one of your listeners, don't scare the kids to death to let them think that you're so far underwater with everything. But if it's a realistic budget and you guys are doing okay, lay it out on the table.
And
what I do for younger kids is I literally count it out. I pay my paycheck in cash, and I count it out. And everyone goes, wow, that's a lot. Then I count out what goes to the government. Then I count out what goes for rent or mortgage and utilities and phone and cable and on and on and on. Here's what goes into savings. Here's what goes into my retirement. Here's what goes into my emergency fund. Here's what goes for the vacation. Whatever it is. And by the way, here's what's left over. That's the budget.
And do you tell them that there is money for their college?
I do, absolutely. And I also tell them the expectations. I can afford a state school. I cannot afford a private college. Private college costs, and lay it out, you know, $50,000 a year. Do not set expectations. What I think is the worst thing in the world is to have kids get into one of the private schools in our country, and then as a parent, you turn around and go, you know what? I can't afford it. That's not fair. And by the way, our public institutions are not better or worse than our private institutions. It really depends upon, as far as I'm concerned, what you put into your education.
Well,
in terms of studying and you know, being involved in what's going on. Not that you just happen to go to, you know, a private school.
I have a lot of clients whose parents paid for their education and even private education back when private education was still semi-affordable.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a terrible thing when parents, and I see this all the time, this isn't exactly on point, but maybe it is to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 55 years old, and I'm seeing it with my friends who sometimes have children who are college age, or maybe they've been past it. And some of them are doing very well financially, and some of them are doing okay, but not great. And for those people, I have seen kids get full scholarships to the state school, nothing to the private school, and dad shells out $200,000 or even more over the child's education, which means that in one particular case, he's going to have to work for maybe another 3-4 years or longer.
Right.
For the child to go to that school instead of the state school where the child got a free ride. And that, to me, is really not a very sound way to manage family finances.
Well, what, you know, I don't disagree with you, and my whole thing is, again, expectations and choices. And as long as that person knows, hey, that's going to mean, like you said, 3 years longer that you can't retire, or there's an opportunity cost and you can't do this, or you have to remortgage your home, or you have to do whatever. As long as they understand the consequences of their decision and they're willing to do that. Not mine. I'm with you. Not my decision. And the other thing is, too, I think it's really tough to burden the kids with the amount of debt. If you have a $200,000 debt when you pop out of college, to sit down with the child and say, you know how long it's going to take you to pay that back? Someone had done a calculation that said, if you finance your education all the way through private school, being a doctor, you're going to be something like 45 to 50 years old before paying that debt back, before you earn the first dollar. You know, having a meager life. Obviously, you're living someplace and eating food. But that's like, whoa. Can you imagine that?
Well, it's pretty scary. And I have a lot of parents, I think, are really wrestling with that issue, particularly parents who came from a system where their parents paid for their school. I know when I grew up, the deal was, and it was, I don't even remember it being stated clearly, but I knew that the deal was my parents would pay for a state school and anything else was on me. And I got into Syracuse and I was really excited. My dad said, well, that's fine. I'm going to pay for what Pitt or Penn State would pay for, and you can pay for the rest. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I did some numbers and I went to Penn State. So I think that's very good advice in terms of setting expectations, as opposed to, let's say, a child who might be hanging out with crew that got into a private school, gets into a private school,
mm-hmm.
and then mom and dad say, hey, we just can't afford it.
Well,
that discussion comes after the child has applied, got in, but unfortunately without financial aid.
What a horrible thing! And I, you know, I'm really impressed that your parents did that. My parents, we always knew that we had to pay for school. I did go to a private school. I worked 40 hours a week and went to school during that time. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't tough doing it because, you know, as a kid, you do what you have to do. But I have to say, looking back on it, I would have preferred to have done college and been more engaged, because when you're working 40 hours a week and going to school, and I graduated in 3 years because it was a whole year less of paying for it. So, yeah, I would have liked a different experience. I would have loved to have gone to a state school. I didn't look at it that way. And so I didn't have the benefit of your parents, you know, to be able to do that. So I just think that as parents, we have to start articulating that.
Now, what do you say to the parents who can't afford a private school for their kids? Is that perfectly fine to set that expectation?
My deal is I think kids should be paying part of their school. Under all circumstances, my deal with my kids, and they both went to private schools, was that you guys have to pay for 1 year. And that was $50,000. Now, they could do it through loans or scholarships or working or, you know, taking AP courses and shortening the college. In both my kids' cases, they worked and they earned the money. And they both paid for $50,000 of their college. I think that's pretty cool.
Now, that's going to come as a revelation to a lot of our listeners. That might be the first shocking thing that you said. Let's assume you or even your parents, that is you, the adult, or the grandparents, have sufficient money. You're still saying it's a good idea for kids to pay for school.
Yep. Well, they pay for it.
Or pay for at least a year.
And I'll tell you one thing. My kids sat there and figured out, if I miss class, it costs me X amount. And my son now is in graduate school, and I was laughing the other day because he still has that conversation. Now he's paying for that. I'm helping a little bit because he happens to be at Columbia. I hate to tell you what it costs. But what's very funny is he still has the conversation with me saying, oh, I missed class the other day and it cost me blah, blah, blah. And he filled out, you know, and I just was smiling because I thought, oh, yay, it's working. It's still working. Yeah.
Well,
it gets them engaged in the process.
Well, yeah. By the way, this is the first time I've ever heard somebody who I really respect say that. You know, I always, you know, I hear a lot of grandparents who are very proud that they paid for every nickel of their kids' school. And I'll note, I know my own experience, undergrad was paid for by my parents, but I paid for my law school, and all of a sudden, I magically became a very good student.
Yep.
When it was on my dime, all of a sudden, I was serious. When I was on the dole, you know, I did all right, but I was not as diligent, and I wasn't working as hard, and actually, I was actually working as a CPA while I was going to school at night.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that miraculous, all of a sudden when it's out of your pocket? And it's not the idea that they have to pay for the whole thing. I certainly did not expect my children to pay $200,000 plus of education. I just didn't. But I did expect them, and it had nothing to do with being able to afford it. It had to do with that's your responsibility. And they were raised that way. They knew that.
Well, that's going to come as a revelation for a lot of listeners, and probably a lot of people in are not going to like that. On the other hand, maybe the Tiger Moms Association of America will stand up and applaud. But by the way, would you say this even if you had $5 or $10 million, and it truly wasn't a money issue for you?
Absolutely.
All right. Well,
it was not a money issue. It was a responsibility issue. And again, it doesn't have to be 50, but I think it has to be something. And I say that to parents. I was giving a speech to a group, and you had to have $500 million in net worth to be invited. And I said the same exact thing to them. It had nothing to do with affording.
Okay, Neil, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. And I want to remind our listeners out there that we are live tonight. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 412-333-9385. We'll be right back with Neil Godfrey, renowned expert on children's finances, and Jim Lang on the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Hello there, and welcome back to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. This is Hannah Haytain-Kay, and I'm here with Jim Lang and Neil Godfrey, renowned expert on children's finances. This is a special show directed at parents and grandparents to help you help your kids and grandkids to be financially responsible and prepared for the future.
And thank you, Hannah. And by the way, thank you for pointing out both the estate, the traditional estate workshop that we're having, which we call the best plan for married couples with traditional families, and the appropriate use of trust to protect your family. And, well, it looks like we have a question here.
Yeah, we have Harry from Wexford has a question. Harry, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
What would you like to ask Neil?
I'm asking, my wife has left West Penn Allegheny Health System about 6-7 years ago. She works with someone else. Because of what is happening with the Highmark and UPMC situation, should she move an ERISA protected account? It's a 403B to an IRA.
Well, I think that's a question more for me than Neil. Not exactly on point, but I'd be happy to handle it anyway, because I happen to have some strong views of that. 9 out of 10 financial advisors are going to say, yes, you should absolutely take all the money in the 403B, roll it into an IRA, and that significantly increases your choice of investments. And that is true. On the other hand, before you do that, there's a couple things that it's really important for people with retirement plans to have, and that is to see if some of the investments that are offered in their existing retirement plan are actually better than things they can get outside on the open market. So in the 403B world, one of the very common investments that I don't think that you can do as well as on the outside is TIAA. That is the bond portion of the TIA CREF, CREF being the stock portion.
Mm-hmm.
In the private sector, you might find things like the Westinghouse or other large retirement plans have what's called a GIC, a guaranteed income contract. And sometimes those bond funds are actually better and paying a higher interest rates than you can get. So I would never tell somebody with money in TIAA, for example, to take that money out of TIAA, roll it into an IRA, and particularly if they have to pay some fees or any commissions on a product, they're probably better off keeping where it is. Notwithstanding, in general, at least for the stock portion, I usually am a fan of rolling it into the IRA. There's a couple of things they have to watch for, which is after-tax dollars inside a retirement plan, and in the private sector, NUA. I don't know if that is helpful, and I'd love to continue this conversation, but we advertised the children's show, and we're going to go back to that.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And Neil, one of the things that I had just mentioned was that one of the workshops that we are doing, which is the appropriate use of trust to protect your money. You know, we have a catchy mm-hmm. title, "Who Says You Go to the Grave," but a lot of times, and it's probably, at least in my practice, it's more for grandparents than for parents. Let's assume for discussion's sake that you are leaving money to a grandchild. And by the way I typically do it in my wills is I usually leave the money to the parent, and I leave the option for the parent to disclaim or say, I don't want it, in which case it goes into a trust for the benefit of the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume for discussion's sake that the grandchildren are young, so we don't know their personality. So, for example, my 16-year-old, I think, is very mature with money and would be able to handle a larger sum of money at a younger age than, say, other kids. But let's assume that the kids are young enough that we really don't know how they're going to be in terms of financial responsibility, etc. And let's assume that it's potentially a lot of money. How would you structure a trust for a how would you, if you were advising a grandparent, and I'm probably more interested in the psychological part because I'll take care of the tax part. How would you want to structure a trust for a grandchild who is too young for you to know their personality?
When they're too young, actually, that's the easy part, because what you're going to do is split up everything evenly.
I didn't make myself clear. So for example, some of the documents I read is, and if the child is less than 21, it goes into a trust, and on their 21st birthday,
X amount goes.
They get the whole thing. In the documents that I do, rather than trying to be King Solomon and figure out the perfect age, I tend to split it up. So the trust that we provide might say something like health, maintenance, support, education, postgraduate
right.
education, down payment for a home, maybe
yep.
a third at 25 or 30, a third at 30 or 35, and then we terminate the trust at 35 or 40. How would you recommend doing that?
I love what you're doing. Number one, what I do is obviously make sure that the parents talk about or grandparents talk about the expectations of what's the money for. And I don't think, I agree with you, there's no magic age of maturity. And if the parents think that, gee, just because they're 21, they should be, you know, responsible, it's not going to happen that way. Because a certain amount, and just like you said, you can't control it from the grave, could pass to the kids. You can specifically say it's for education and for other things, you know, the health and maintenance and well-being of the child with a trustee. But the fact of the matter is, when the money does transfer, it could be for, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and that's not what your intent was. Unless, of course, it's specifically for college or something very, very specific. However, I think that it's the conversation, and what I do is recommend that you actually put it on video, because you may not live to see it transfer. And for the children and grandchildren to see a video that says, I love you, this is who I am, and this is what this money is for, is a very powerful tool. It's not in just in writing. It's really conveying from the heart who I am. And it may be, I want you to donate some money to charity. I want you to be involved in certain things. I want you to have this money for your health and well-being. This is what I want for you.
Yep.
Then I do think it should go into tranches. I think that a certain amount when they go into school, a certain amount when they come out of school. You want the money to be, I think anyway, a benefit for their life, not something that's punitive and puts a shackle around their legs. That's not, to me anyway, the purpose of what you're trying to do. There was one family I dealt with, by the way, that controlled the children with a 93-point will and a trust from the grave to the extent of who they would marry, what their religion would be, how many times a week they would go to church. It was unfortunately bordering, to me anyway, on psychotic.
Well, that sounds like a nightmare, but I'll tell you what's so interesting is that we have a variety of experts on the Lang Money Hour, and one of them happened to be an estate attorney, and the estate attorney recommended the same thing that you did, which was actually a video of the parents or grandparents explaining some of the purposes, not just in the exact legal language, but in terms of, you know, from the heart, what this money's for. And what he actually said is say a little bit more about what had to be done to earn the money. So it's not like I was just sitting on my butt and all of a sudden I came into $1.5 million. No, I worked 60 hours a week for 45 years and have accumulated this money, and because I have that old depression era mentality, I never was smart enough to spend it, and now I'm leaving it to you. So it's really interesting that and he said do a video, and it's really interesting you're really saying the same thing.
Yeah, and it's such a wonderful thing for the kids to have. Now, P.S., on the video side, I recommend all sorts of other videos, too, not just, you know, kind of the gilding about the money part of it, but who we are and what life has meant and what you mean to me, and when I saw you for the first time, when Mom handed me to you, what that meant to me, and how I love and adore you, and this is what this is about to me. It's not about the money. I never want you to look at it in terms of the money. It's about what I'm able to do for you and what I want that to mean to you.
Well,
and it doesn't have to be it's just for education. It could be I want you to take the most awesome trip in the world. But while you're there, I want you to give, you know, X amount to charity while you're there. I cannot tell you what this is meant to kids. Could you imagine if your I don't know if your grandparents are alive or not, but if they had done something like that, how cool would that be, right?
I think that would be pretty cool. And interestingly that you said that, because I am actually my mom is actually 95 years old, and
wow.
and she's still with it, and we are videotaping her.
Good.
With some different stories, and they even actually have, you can actually buy canned questions, if you will, to get her to open up. And the little twist that I wanted to add to that, by the way, is instead of me being the interviewer, I wanted my daughter to be the interviewer.
Love it. Love it.
So the thing I've been toying with, just for your own and our listeners' information, I haven't done anything yet. Maybe that would be a good New Year's resolution in addition to the type of practice that we have, is to somehow coordinate or offer that as an additional service.
I love that as a service, because you know what's really cool? They can come into your office, you can set the camcorder up, and you can do it right there. I love that, because that's one of the things that the family's like, how do we do it, and who's going to do it? You know, do it. What a wonderful service to do. And what you can do is have the money questions. You can have the non-money questions. And, you know, literally, you guys can walk out of the office. It doesn't have to be that you're sitting there, you know, listening.
Sure. Yeah.
I love that as a service.
Yeah, there's an attorney that does that. And I actually brought it up to some of the other attorneys and people in my office. And they said, oh, no, it's a lot of aggravation. And then how are you going to bill for it? And blah, blah, blah. And that now I have a renewed enthusiasm for doing that, because, frankly, it's going to be a little bit awkward for us, for my mom. You know, we're juggling, well, who's the video person going to be? What's the lighting going to be? But in effect, if I set that up one time,
yep.
Then it would be relatively easy for clients. And then the other thing I was just thinking is that might be a good way for me to do frequent video communications.
Yeah.
So
you know what? I mean, the truth is, we're in the YouTube world. That is the best way to communicate right now.
Well,
and everyone's comfortable with it.
Yeah, and in fact, I've actually done quite. I probably have about 90 clips on YouTube.
Yeah, I do.
where I just,
I have Oprah appearances. I have, you know, I have a whole bunch of stuff. Yep.
Right, and then
I had my son on Oprah when he was 7 years old. You want to talk about Mom, take it down? Yeah.
Oh, I think that's terrific, because the other thing that I do is I record I videotape a lot of the workshops, and then I'll cut out parts that I thought were particularly interesting, and then I'll put them on YouTube, and then I actually email them out.
Exactly.
So, by the way, I will take the liberty of mentioning that if anybody is interested in that, if they go to retiresecure.com and they sign up for the email, they will get not only a summary of retiresecure.com, which was the best-selling book but then they'll get on the email list that they'll have these. By the way, you know something? I just realized I have done a great disservice. We have not talked about your book, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children, who, by the way, I not only liked it myself, but I had a client rave about it. He said, well, I read a couple of these money books about kids, and Neil's was by far the best one. So I should ask you, Neil, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children, which I really liked. What is the best way for our clients or our listeners to get a hold of that if they are interested? Which, by the way, I'm going to say, if you are a parent or a grandparent and you are interested in raising financially responsible children, obviously listening to us, and particularly since we've scattered a little bit in our focus, would be a terrific thing. Neil, what's the best way that our listeners could get a hold of that? Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children.
They can go on Amazon and order that, and or they can be in touch with me. They can Google me and get in touch with me. I've written, kind of pathetic, but about 23 books I've written.
Well, I don't think it's pathetic. I admire it. I typically just mention one because otherwise it's sometimes overwhelming. And I think that, and let me ask you this, if you had young children and you wanted to, you were interested in, let's say, one source and you didn't want to read 23 books, which is that the one that you would read?
Yeah, if you want to raise financially responsible children, that's the book that I would read. If you want to get the kids involved, I've got books for kids, and I've got, you know, other things, but that's exactly the book, you're right, that I would recommend.
Okay, Neil, we're going to take another quick break, but before we do, could you give the listeners your website address?
Sure. It's Children's, with an S, Financial Network, you know, www.childrensfinancialnetwork.com. Or they can Google me, Neil Godfrey, NEALEGODFREY, and they'll be sent into the website.
Okay, that's great. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. And I want to remind our listeners that we are live. So if you have any questions for Neil, give us a call at 412-333-9385. We'll be right back with Neil Godfrey and Jim Lang on the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Hello there, and welcome back to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. This is Hannah Haytainen Kay, and I'm here with Jim Lang and Neil Godfrey, renowned expert on children's finances. This is a special show directed at parents and grandparents to help your kids and grandkids to be financially responsible and prepared for the future.
I believe we have a question.
Okay, yes, we have Bob from Pittsburgh with a question on IRAs.
Yes, my wife recently deceased, and I just signed off on the documents to passing on her IRAs to six grandchildren. And I wasn't popular with my children because they said, I don't want it used for their college. I think it's parents' responsibility for their college money. I want it to be used as a long-term IRA, passed on IRA to the children, stretched out, as I think they call it, a stretched out IRA. And of course, if anything serious would happen, I think there's two trustees. I'm on with each parent as trustee for their children, and I think we can change it if something became an emergency that they needed money. But I really thought that the intentions of passing on money was for solely for the children in long-term security, like their own IRA. I just wanted your opinion of whether you think that's a good, bad, or indifferent idea.
Well, what I would say is, first of all, it is the choice. When you're writing a will, it's really up to you to decide what to do and where your money goes and how it goes. So, for example, I'm going to say the vast majority of the wills that I write for minors or children who are college age or younger typically do include education, but in the area of the IRA, and specifically what you're talking about is a stretch IRA. So let's just say, for discussion's sake, for easy math, that the IRA is $100,000. The child is required to take a minimum required distribution, just like you are when you turn 70, of the inherited IRA, or in the case of a Roth IRA, it's the same factor. And let's say that the child is 15 years old, and according to the tables, has roughly a, let's say, a 70-year life expectancy. They can take 1 over 70, or let's say between 1 and 2% that they have to take out, and then leave the rest in there. Now, what you're doing, which to me is very interesting, because you are combining your values being that the parent pay for college, you're combining your values with what makes a lot of sense financially, which is keep the distributions very, very small in the early years and let that money continue to grow tax-deferred, or in the case of a Roth IRA, income tax-free, and have that money available for the child when they become an adult. And actually, you're helping the child or grandchild with their retirement. So my hat's off to you. You're an original thinker, and maybe your kids aren't thrilled with that idea, but I'll tell you what, even just a relatively small amount of money in an inherited IRA or an inherited Roth IRA for a grandchild can make a huge difference in their life.
That makes me feel comfortable. Numbers were right on. Each child will have about that, so they will have distribution through their life. Some are only 3 and 4 years old, and some are 15 and 17 years old. But at 40, they're free to have it.
Right. Now, the only thing that you have to be really careful about is the trust that was drafted. And we draft these trusts as attorneys all the time. The trust that is drafted must meet 5 specific conditions. And if you botch any one of them, and it's very easy to botch it, then the IRS has the right to accelerate the income, and you don't get that stretch. So you and for some reason that I don't understand, the vast majority of, whether it's the financial advisor, the attorney, the client, most, and I even heard statistics as high as 90% or more, most of the people botch the stretch IRA. So hopefully you went to a good attorney who got the right language in, and then you're going to follow it up. And then, by the way, I do like the fact that there is something in the trust for an emergency, because you don't want the kid to, you know, be out on the street so he can live in a palace when he's 50.
Well, the emergency is the trustees, me, the grandfather with the child, my child.
Mm-hmm.
And if we decide something is wrong with this trust, we can change it.
Yeah, and I like that. And by the way, I also like the fact that you're keeping the trustee in the family. Mellon Bank and PNC might not be too happy, but I prefer that. I'd love to chat further, but again, I have this wonderful national expert on the line, and I do have a couple more questions for her about children's finances, although I guess this is indirectly children's finances. Neil, I don't know if you had any opinion on what
he
was saying.
No, I agree with you 100%, and I would love, you know, you to be able to take a look at it to make sure that it's right, because I agree, and that's one of the big scary parts, that it can be messed up.
Well, it can, and frankly, usually is. So that's one of my big things. See, I don't have the $5 and $10 million clients, and I don't address people like you do, that you have to have a half a billion dollars to walk into the room.
Yeah, that was unusual. No, I deal with normal people. But I'm just saying that I think it's important to know that all people have the same problems. And that, frankly, in terms of this situation, what a wonderful way to do the gift. What a wonderful legacy. So, you know, I'm with you and...
Yeah, and you have to, and it's interesting when you see Pittsburgh's a working town, and most of my clients, they have been working 20, 30, 40 years.
Sure.
They didn't grow up with a silver spoon, and they became, I have a lot of college professors, a lot of engineers, a lot of, you know, let's say middle managers, and what has happened is, so they start out in life not having a lot of money. And the salaries that they make, you know, are not necessarily phenomenal, but it was reasonable. So it was enough to pay the mortgage, pay the for the kids' teeth, pay for at least maybe with your idea a little different, but basically pay for the kids' college education. So money's always been tight, and then the money that they have when they're in their 60s or older are very significant retirement plans. So the planning for that has to be really good, and I hope that that gentleman's attorney really understood how to draft for IRAs and retirement plans, which at least in my case, that is the majority of probably more than half my clients' money, the money in their retirement plans, not in their savings or money outside their retirement plans.
Well, it's what we've worked for our whole lives, and we want to make sure that it goes to where you want it. And I don't want people to be penny wise and pound foolish. A lot of people think, oh, I can do this on my own, or, oh, I can save money. This is not where to penny pinch on this. Same thing when people go, oh, I can go online and write my own will. No, what I would advise is go in to an attorney with the things that you think you want as your list. That's going to save you money. So it's an hour meeting and not a 10-hour meeting.
Well, Neil,
don't try this at home.
The clock is running down. There's something that you said in the last time you came as a guest that had a personal impact on me and my family. And you talked a little bit about not necessarily having a situation where we had before, which was we kind of on a case-by-case basis decided what expense we would be happy paying for and which ones we didn't, but you more or less had a different idea in terms of, let's say, allowance. So what I'm going to do, because in case we get caught off, I'm going to give one more plug for your book, and then I'm going to ask you to answer that question. So the book is Money Doesn't Grow on Trees: A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children, and you can reach that on Amazon.com. Again, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees by Neil Godfrey, A Parent's Guide to Raising Financially Responsible Children. All right, so if you could tell our listeners a little bit about, and you have 2 minutes to tell our listeners a little bit, and actually maybe about a minute, because we have a little outro. that's a lot. That's tough. But a little bit about children and allowance.
My basic tenet is that I think that they should earn their allowance, and because we're kind of incubating them at home. However, there's some chores they do as a citizen of the household and don't get paid. And then you have to teach them to budget. A budget is a habit, just the same way you budget now. So part goes to charity, part is instant gratification, part is pushed off to save for something larger, and part is long-term. For a kid, long-term is college, their future. And that's in a nutshell what I believe.
Wow, I appreciate that. I know when I raised children, we had our little separate banks, and part was savings, part was giving, and part was what they could spend. We didn't have the long-term, though. So that's really excellent advice. I want to thank you for joining us, Neil, and for sharing this invaluable wisdom with us. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us for another Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out the show archives and listen on demand anytime at retiresecure.com. KQV listeners can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732. That's 412-521-2732. And reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person. Again, that's 412-521-2732.